Welcome to a Nerd Sight episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. This will be the portion of the show where if our other host, Agent 70, who was normally is on but isn't on this week, he would play the nice sound effects in the background, but since he's not, we're doing them manually. But anyway, so yes, this is the Comic Book Chronicles, and I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
I love it.
And I'm joined by my co-host, Dirt, from the Pop Culture Network.
Yay!
And we have two special guests with us tonight. First, I want to introduce Omar Spahi. Did I say the last name right? I should have asked you beforehand.
Yeah, you did.
Nice.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
And we also have Zeke Donnelly.
I'm kind of excited to be here. Well, that's to be determined.
Yes. You have to keep tuning into the show to see if its excitement level stays the same or goes up or down.
Yeah. So far, so good. Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Quick plug-in of social media accounts and whatnot to get out the way first. Of course, you can go to theclicknation.com to watch all previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and read comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Circle us on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. So make sure to subscribe and give us nice 5-star reviews and review other reviews so we can move up the charts on Stitcher and iTunes. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com.
Let's do it.
So we have Omar and Seek, and they're from the comic book company OSSM Comics.
Yeah, we're from Awesome Comics.
Oh, that's okay. What it stands for.
I was going to say, I had that moment this afternoon because as I was reading through Thaniel, there are ads, like company ads on there, and it's like, we make comics, and then OSSM. I'm like, what? We make comics. Awesome.
Yeah, it was the first time Omar explained that to me. I had the same reaction. I go, OSSM Comics, cool. And I'm like, what's that stand for? And he goes, well, just say it like awesome. And I was like, oh, cool. That's even better.
And then he brought up Rob Liefeld.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was like Rob Liefeld thing? He's like, no, not like Rob Liefeld. He's like, we're going to be on time. And I was like, okay. just kidding, Rob. He's a good guy. Just kidding.
And what's your tagline for Awesome Comics? We make good comics.
our tagline is redefining awesome.
Oh, okay.
It was making okay stuff good, but that just didn't roll off the tongue. So.
Right. And so Awesome Comics has a comic coming out in April called Daniel, which is written by Omar with art by Terry Huddleston, which we'll get into that throughout the interview. But first, I wanted to let both of you, I guess, go first and just sort of introduce yourself to the listeners and watchers.
Sure. I'm Omar Spahi, and I'm the CEO of Awesome Comics. I'm the writer and the creator of Daniel, as well as Xenoglyphs and Separators. And we're really excited. We're really trying to break into the comic book community with this company, and we're really trying to make this our coming out party. And we're really excited because Daniel's been getting fantastic press, and it's just been everywhere and anywhere I look. So it's awesome to see it there.
Yes, and I am Seek Donnelly, and I am the editor-in-chief and marketing director at Awesome Comics. And I'm a big nerd. That's pretty much, that's all you need to know about me. Next question.
That's all a person needs to know in life.
That's right. I'm a big whiny fanboy, and I love comics.
As do we, which is why we get together every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So nice. If you're ever home and you're bored, you can just turn to theclicknation.com and watch us live.
That's right. Or if you're driving to work the next day in your car on Friday, yep. You know, stuck in that Orlando traffic. Or I don't know. What city are you guys in?
I'm in Athens, Georgia.
I'm in Springfield, Illinois.
Get out of here. I'm from the Georgia area. Sweet.
Oh, what part?
Well, I lived in South Carolina, Greenville, but I used to go to Atlanta all the time. And I've actually, my favorite band is from Athens, Seven Dust.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Athens has a big music background.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Good, love that city.
Okay, so let me go to my questions here. I guess first, Omar, and let people know, Seek, you said you're the editor-in-chief of Awesome Comics, correct?
Yes, sir.
Nice. So I guess first, how did you two link up together?
Well, I originally walked into Golden Apple Comics when my first issue of Xenoglyphs first came out, and I said, Seek was working there at the time, and I walked up and I said, hey, are you guys interested in having this new book on your shelves? And Seek was so cool and so awesome, he bought it right there on the spot, and was one of our first sales when we first kind of got together, and you know, we just kind of kept talking, and you know, we kind of partnered up and have made something really beautiful out of it.
It's, yeah, he's underselling it, because like we get at Golden Apple, like we're kind of centralized in Hollywood, and we get a lot of people come in and sell their books, and there's obviously we want to help everyone, and if we could do something where we can take some on consignment, like we usually work that out, but rarely do I grab one and like it instantly. And so when Omar showed me his, I really love the art. Then he gave me his pitch, and I really love that. So then we stayed friends for about a year, a little over a year. And then once he started actually building his company, he had a position and he offered it to me. And I was so flattered by it, but also knew how hard I was going to have to work. So I hesitantly, but also excitedly took the job.
And how long ago was that?
I think November, right, Omar?
I think that's about it.
Yeah, like this past November. So 4 months.
Cool.
Yeah, and in 4 months we've had we went from one book to four books now, Omar, right?
Yeah, we really just kind of I think it's six books honestly, with stuff we can't announce yet. But yeah, it's
that's true. Yeah,
one book to six books, so we've just taken it. We're growing really really rapidly. Hopefully we could sustain it and put out books and have people really love them. So.
Yeah, there's no brakes on this car. It's like we're out of control now. We're going downhill.
I'd imagine it's that excitement of once you get going, you know, more and more ideas keep coming, and you don't want to let the pressure off because you don't want to get slack and you want to keep the momentum going.
Absolutely. That's always been a goal of ours, is to just continue to put out something monthly, put it out on time, and make a quality comic book. So we've been really getting some really positive reviews about Daniel that have been just kind of like right before the book comes out. So it's really great to see that. And we really have high hopes for that book, and hopefully it's going to propel us into that, that next level of the comic stratosphere.
Let people know, I give the cliff notes of what Daniel is for the listeners.
Daniel's a dark comic book. It's kind of, you know, what if everyone around you was dying, and what if somehow it was your fault? And it kind of plays into the whole meaning of life. Why are we here? You know, why is there death? It kind of plays into a lot of deep things like religion, philosophical things, and stuff like that. So it is a deep comic book. It is a mature-rated book to hopefully get people talking about, you know, stuff they normally wouldn't be talking about, like, oh, this is kind of out there. This is a new take on this. This is a new take on that. And hopefully get their mind kind of to be expanded and be blown in all sorts of new fun ways.
Yeah, when Omar first pitched the book to me and told me about it, him and Terry actually already had issue one done, and I read it and enjoyed it. But I had all these questions. It's like, well, okay, if he has these powers, like why does he use them for this? What, you know, it's like all your standard comic book questions. And Omar was like, well, I answer those in the next couple issues, but I, you know, as your job as editor, like let's bounce some ideas off each other. And we came up with some good stuff. And what Omar promised me from the beginning, which the book definitely still executes, which is it starts on a street level and ends on a very cosmic level with a bunch of big questions being answered, but while still pinning itself to the ground it's in the first issue. So the first issue is kind of like a fun misdirect in a way, because it's a lot of action and it's a little bit of glimpses at the character and the setup, but then 2, 3, and 4 just like unravels in a way that you like that I don't think people are going to be ready for when they get to those issues.
Yeah, if I could say one of the things that kind of impressed upon me when I read the first issue is that he just seems like a normal guy. It's, you know, he runs around and he's, you know, fighting the bad guys, whatever. He also has this normal life and it just seems like kind of the standard thing. But it's not really until like maybe halfway through that you see him actually do the transformation from one to the other and you realize there's something mystical going on. He's not just a guy picking up weapons and going out there, that there's something on a higher level. But it's not like an origin issue where in the first 3 pages, you know, the chemicals fall on him and suddenly he has superpowers or anything like that. It just seems to kind of unravel in a different way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
With as far as like kind of the origin story, I think the whole story as a whole is an origin story. We kind of go back and forth and we kind of just jump around and kind of find the most important moments in the story and try to focus on that. And we're kind of just introducing you to the characters really in issue one. Issue 2 through 4, things will start to blow up and kind of get to that next level. So the whole thing is kind of an origin story. It's only a 4-issue miniseries. So it's not something that's going to like, oh, like when's this? When do we find out all these secrets? When is everything? It's kind of all kind of comes together in the next 2-3 months. So we're really excited for that.
And that was actually the other reason why I pushed to get the first 2 issues out, because in April, issue 1 and 2 come out 2 weeks apart. And we wanted to do that for a couple of reasons. One, it was good from a marketing perspective of like me being able to, because since I'm, you know, doing a lot of stuff, which now I have some help with, but we're, when I'm promoting the book, it makes sense to push 2 issues at one time. But also from a story standpoint, I thought, okay, for those people who do have questions at the end of that first issue and do get that teaser that Omar set up about, oh, this isn't just a guy in a hoodie with like swords. It's actually way more complex than that. Those people are going to have questions, and I didn't want people to wait long for their answers. So issue 2 is kind of an origin issue. You kind of see a little bit of glimpses at how he got those powers, what's going on, why he decides to use them the way he is, if he's really in control, and what big cosmic thing he's actually tethered to with those powers. So it really is like, you know, for people who are intrigued by the first issue, you're definitely going to be blown away by 2, 3, and 4.
So is it set up like, I guess issues 1 and 2 are kind of like the opening arc, and 3 and 4 are the, you know, the arc and the ending arc, if you're splitting them up and having the first 2 issues in April, and are 3 and 4 going to be in May, or are they going to go back to monthly?
No. Yeah, it'll go monthly after that. So it'll be May is issue 3 and June is issue 4. And it is 1 through story, but I thought it was important that the people, like, for example, like what Thaniel is, you know, once you learn more about him in issue 2, you're going to have even more questions. And so I felt like, okay, well, let's get 1 and 2 out there. I don't want to kill Terry. Terry's awesome. And and I'm already, you know, as an editor, it's already my job to push everybody to make sure that we stay on time with books. So I didn't want to do a bi-weekly book, with every issue, because I didn't want to push him too hard. And I also don't want the work to suffer. He's really great at what he does, as you can see in the book. And I promise you, if you love what you're seeing now, like, wait, again, visually also, not just story, in issues 2, 3, and 4, it just keeps escalating.
Whose idea was it to go with the Blood-O-Rama style, where it's all black and white, except the blood's in red?
I think that came through a conversation me and Terry had. Kind of, you know, what would work well for the book. And it really worked well with the theme of the book, which is, you know, that life isn't just black or white. It's actually different shades of gray. And there's different kind of emphasis that kind of get put on that. So it's cool to kind of see that style. It's something that's very rarely done. It's done in like Sin City, for example, is one of like the most classic times it's done. Walking Dead is another example of a black and white comic book that's wildly successful. And we're trying to push the envelope because there's not a lot of companies that are doing that. So there are some major ones, but it's not something that everyone's doing anymore. And a lot of people kind of steer away from it. And we're trying to steer back towards it because it really works with the theme of our book.
I also want to give some praise to the letterer on the book, Steve Wenz.
Is that it? Steve Wenz. Yeah.
That was actually the first thing I noticed when I was flipping through the issue number one was sort of just the font style of the words in the book. I thought that was kind of creative.
Yeah, Steve has been literally a dream to work with. He's been with me since I first started Xenoglyphs, and he's done lettering for everything. He's amazing to work with. He's done lettering for just recently. He was in Batman Black and White number 6. He does a couple things a month. He did Adventure Time. He used to work directly for DC, and has been working with them for several years. So that's kind of how I got in touch with him. And he's just been great to work with. I'm really grateful to have him on the team, and he brings that next level of lettering that the books wouldn't look anywhere near as good as if they didn't have that.
Yeah, as a Green Lantern fan, I used to see his name a lot in Green Lantern Corps. So it's really cool to work with him, and he's the nicest guy in the world, and he's really efficient. Like it's like, hey, we need this done at this time. He's like, okay. And it's done. he's exactly, as for an editor, it's like he's exactly the kind of person you want to work with.
Because of course you want everything to be on time. So
of course, and I'm like, whether he has 3 days to do it or a week to do it, the guy makes it happen. So he's awesome.
All right, this is kind of a random question, just because I'm a big nerd that pays attention to weight too much more than I probably should.
I like you, Doug.
The book actually says copyright November 2012. Has this been in development a long time, or is that a typo?
No, the book's been in development for a really long time. And we kind of had the first issue kind of planned out, and it kind of took a while. And we're like, okay, we want to do a big release. We want to make it really something that's like on a comic book level, a launching level scale. So we really kind of waited for the right time to push the product, and the right time is now. I mean, the book was done, I think, in November of 2012. So it is, I think that's the date the first issue is finished. The issue 2 is actually wrapping up as we speak. So it's just taken that long for us to get that whole concept and kind of line up our next 3 or 4 titles that are coming in after this. So it's not about kind of Nathaniel. It's kind of about doing everything at once and kind of know where our company is going and kind of build the roadmap for the company as a whole.
Since Doug brought up a nerd, very nerdish.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, you can go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, when Omar first created Daniel with Terry and everything, like Omar was one guy trying to do all of this by himself and work, you know, another job at the same time to like, so he could eat and keep a roof over his head. And, you know, that's a lot of people try to do that in this industry when they want to build a company. They try to do too much by themselves, take on too much. And so when Omar was like, okay, we've had this book, we printed some early copies to kind of get it out there, get people talking about it. But now that I'm really willing to devote time to it and build this company, I need to hire someone who will make sure that book comes out on time, no matter what the cost, who will, you know, like, I mean, how many editors do you know that people say nice things about? so he's like, I need someone to just stay on top of all of us and make sure we keep to these schedules. And so it's a job that I always wanted, but it is sometimes a thankless job because sometimes your job is to be aggravated and be short with people. And that comes with the territory, but I try to, luckily, Terry's very professional. Omar's very professional. So if we ever have a spat, it's usually for the betterment of the book, and it's never personal. And that's always key when you're making these projects, you know. And so it took some time to, you know, like Omar said, to develop it and get it right. But now that it is right, the time is now, and we want to release that and line it up with our entire library that's coming out for the rest of the year. So it's just kind of serendipitous. Like it seems like obviously that seems like a big gap to the average person, but two, three, and four are all going to be bam, bam, bam this summer. And basically if you like number one, like buckle up, because our job is to blow your brains out by the end of it.
Are you looking on at a timely? Digital?
Yes.
I was just going to say, are you looking at digital, or are you just doing strictly print?
No, we're doing both digital and press. I know that Xenoglyphs right now is available on xenoglyphscomic.com. And I know that we're trying to get involved with Comixology. We've been having some difficulty with them because they're kind of they have a monopoly on the comic book publishing digitally as far as the iOS and the Android go, because they're the go-to app. So they have this whole other thing that's called a Comixology Submit, and we're trying to get involved through Comixology Submit right now and kind of move over to the main page. And so we're thinking about doing exclusive digital issues and stuff like that to kind of get there. But it's going to take a couple months until we get there. Hopefully by the launch of Monomyth number one, we'll be fully on Comixology.
Well, because I saw, I think it was Xenoglyphs number one was available through Iverse.
That's it, yeah.
But none of the others were available on there.
Yeah. Well, what we did was we tried out Iverse first, and we kind of were like, you know, we wanted to see what the draw of Iverse is. And it seemed to be that Comixology was just the one app that seemed to be like drawing the most amount of attention to it. So we decided if we were going to go through an exclusive contract or something like that, we would try to go through Comixology.
Yeah. So when you sell it on, did you say it's on awesomecomics.com?
It's on xenoglyphscomic.com. And then awesomecomics.com is actually developing a store, which should be up in about 2 weeks.
So you're just selling them as like straight PDFs or CBRs, or what are you doing?
Yeah, at this point they're PDFs.
Okay.
So they are PDF samples. There are going to be, I think Seek can talk a little bit more about the digital format, because he's been working with Steve directly, so he can tell.
Yeah, we've changed up the because the one thing me and Steve both agreed on was the amount of ads that were in some of our books. So we wanted to shift that around for digital releases. So now when you get a digital one, right when you open up the book, you're right into the story. And you get your 18 pages uninterrupted, and there's like two ads to promote the next issue, and then then Thaniel at the end. So me and Steve are working really closely to make a tighter formatted digital copy of the book. And then also Omar and I are also talking to other companies and new companies that are getting into the digital printing, or not printing, but obviously the digital realm as well, including a site who has offered to maybe let us add some audio and video to our comic books, which I, as someone who's a cross-media nutcase with artwork, like I am jumping all over. So we're hoping to develop that too. But yeah, the awesomecomics.com, we are building a store now. Actually, this weekend I'm going to build it, and hopefully by the following weekend in March, it'll be up and running, and you can get our PDFs for 99 cents.
And how long until we get hoodies with that Grim Reaper logo across the front?
Yeah, Omar, when are we doing that?
It's going to happen sooner rather than later. We're hopefully going to have them, a few at least, for the awesome team in time for April. But, right. You know, it's something we definitely want to do and want to push. We're really happy with the design carries under the hoodies, and it's really been fantastic.
Since we're going into all sort of like the behind the scenes stuff, I have another, I guess, question.
Sure.
I'm always interested in how collaborations come together. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess maybe since Omar started it all, like how much trial and error goes into like, you know, going out and finding artists and finding an editor and letterer and so forth.
There have been, I think maybe like 5 or 6 artists who have been kind of tentatively attached to this book. Prior to Terry jumping on board. And, you know, it's just like, I came through conversations like, hey, I have this book. I really want to work with you. I like your art style. Let's see if we can work something out. And then sometimes it'll just fall through the cracks, whether it's people, you know, not being able to follow through, whether it's people's schedules, whether it's their interests, everything kind of depends on all that. So For to make this book happen, it actually took a lot, but I really found the right partner in Terry, and he's, I'm glad whoever dropped out before really did. so we can really focus on finding the right guy, which we did.
Talk a little bit about, I don't know if we gave you a chance to explain what Xenoglyphs was about.
Yeah, well, Xenoglyphs is about these 9 different elemental stones, and each stone has its own different power, like earth, wind, water, light, darkness. And if you hold that stone, you're able to do whatever you want with that element. It's kind of like Captain Planet meets like the fifth element.
Captain Planet was the first thing that popped in my mind.
I get it all the time at conventions. And what's really cool about it is it takes place in like our real world and goes back and explains a lot of like mysteries and conspiracies and a lot of like unexplained phenomena and stuff like that. So it really goes back and explains a lot of the unexplained.
And is that fully out already?
The first 6 issues of that are out. What we're actually planning on to do is we're actually going to try to make a sequel to it, and we're going to call it Separators. So the trade for that is actually going to be released hopefully in August, tentatively. And we're hopefully trying to do a Separators number 1, which is going to take off right where the trade left off. So it kind of gets in new readers and also brings in old fans. So kind of going to try to like merge the two universes together. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
And, of course, that'll be available on the Awesome Comics store.
Yeah, all of our books will be available on the Awesome Comics store as they become more and more available.
Yeah, I think we're going to try the format for trade paperbacks. We're still talking about it a little bit, so we haven't fully landed on the price, but we notice a lot of success with indie books that are graphic novels that are priced at $9.99. And then the digital ones are like $5 or $6.99. So we've been talking a little bit about that to – because I think it would be a good sell for Xenoglyphs because you get 1 through 6 for like a, you know, a steal basically at $9.99 for the printed copy of the trade. And then our goal is to release that maybe about 3 weeks, if not 4 weeks, right before Separators 1. So those who missed out on the single issues can buy the trade, catch up on it, and then season 2 is Separators. And I don't know why Omar keeps saying we're going to try to make Separators number 1, because we are making Separators number 1. Like, that's happening, my friend.
No, absolutely. That's our book after Monomyth, which is Seek's book.
That's right.
Nice lead-in to Monomyths. Seek, you want to tell us what Monomyths is about?
Sure. Well, Monomyth, for you, Westboro Baptist Church fans, is basically a what if. I'm a big what if fan from Marvel. It was one of my favorite comics growing up, and the story revolves around like what if Lucifer did not fall from heaven, but Saint Michael did in the final battle between, you know, when they were fighting up there. So Lucifer actually sides with God and tells Adam and Eve not to eat the apple. So humans actually grow up in Eden. They never know sin. They never know war. It's a pretty peaceful place. And then Michael, who's been cast out, is now building an army with something that he stole from heaven before he fell, and gets ready to go and attack Eden and wipe it out and take away, you know, God's precious humans. And when he arrives, he thinks it's going to be an easy battle. But Enoch has been born, and Enoch is the first natural-born warrior that Eden has ever seen. So Michael shows up thinking it's going to be an easy fight, and it's definitely not. And the thing about Enoch is he's unique in the way that when he fights, other people, when they see it happen, they adapt to it. So he's kind of almost like an infection in a way, but a positive one, because he's going to help his people survive. So it's like the theme is kind of like violence, like, you know, can it be used for good? Or, you know, and that's kind of one of the themes of it. And then the other theme is the hero's journey. You know, I'm a big fan of stuff like Gilgamesh. So this is my take on Gilgamesh meets Final Fantasy is kind of what I'm colliding together here.
Nice.
Well, and with Monomyth, I mean, Monomyth, isn't that the whole idea of the, like, the basic hero journey of taking that kind of standard, like the hero is called to arms and he goes out and fights, and different right. cultures may interpret it different ways, but it's always that same basic story. Well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah. I mean, I didn't even bury the lead on titling it Monomyth. Like, I just called a spade a spade. And yeah, Monomyth is about, you know, someone going from the world of the known into the world of the unknown, and taking a leap of faith in a lot of ways, but and going against the grain. When everyone moves one way, a hero moves the other way. You know, when everyone forms in a rally over here, if the hero, you know, doesn't believe in that rally, he will go this way and start his own. And that's the hero's journey, is to sometimes you have to go against the grain. Sometimes you have to ice skate uphill, as Blade would put it.
How do you go about coming up with the names for your books? I always, whenever I'm trying to think of stories, I might have a story of them like, okay, now I need a title for it.
Ask Omar, because I just call my books what they actually are.
For me, for Thaniel is based off of the Greek word Thanos, which, as you know from Marvel, is you know, like the god of death. That's what it translates to in Greek. And so the prefix Than actually translates directly to death. And Nathaniel is actually the warrior of God. And so I kind of put a little cross between Thanos and Nathaniel, and you kind of get Thaniel. And that's kind of where Thaniel's kind of name comes from. As far as Xenoglyphs is about strange kind of stones. And so Xeno is another word for strange, or is another prefix for strange, and glyphs is just another word for stone. So it's Xenoglyphs. So we kind of name it exactly what you're going to get.
I just realized we're not the most creative namers.
But I guess the theory of keep it simple.
Yeah, no, it's true. Simple sales sometimes. You know, sometimes just a basic word or a basic something, people can wrap their brain around. It's easier.
Exactly.
Yep.
History time. What were some comics or even comic book creators that influenced you both growing up?
Omar Spahi. Sorry, go ahead, Omar.
No, you get this one first.
All right. Well, I said this on a couple other places, but they and I probably tweeted enough too. So if you've heard this before, I'm sorry. I actually, from a comic book standpoint, I've always wanted the career of the guy who is like Peter David or John Ostrander, like the guy who comes along and he gets one book at a time, maybe sometimes two, but he just gets like one book and he just really rocks the crap out of it. Like John Ostrander's Suicide Squad or Peter David's like Hulk run, or, you know, any of the stuff these guys have done, they just like a real consistent run on a character or a group of characters. So I always like those kind of guys. But I am a fan of like Jeff Johns and Grant Morrison, some of the bigger guys, but my comic book influences a lot of times come from Archie Goodwin and Jim Shooter, as editors, not so much as writers, but as editors, because I thought they both did for their decades that they worked at DC and Marvel. I thought like Jim Shooter in the 80s, like I thought rocked the house at Marvel. Books were on time. They were really good in my opinion. Granted, that was the stuff I grew up reading, but, and then same with Archie Goodwin in the 70s and early 80s and stuff, like everyone just really on top of their game. And as far as writers that inspired me, my biggest inspiration is Agatha Christie, actually. I have every one of her books, and I love her writing. And even if I thought I could guess the ending to her book, she would always surprise me. So I always wanted to be like her. So she's actually my biggest writing inspiration.
Is it true you were in the Agatha Christie book club?
Yeah. When I was 12, my mom, she was so happy that I wasn't doing drugs, which was a big accomplishment in the neighborhood that we lived in, that so she asked me if I wanted more books, because I would read books all the time. I read like the Bible four times, and I would just read things. I couldn't get enough words in my head. And so she signed me up for the Agatha Christie book club because I loved And Then There Were None, because we read it like in sixth grade or something. And so I got all of her books. It took 5 years, because I think she wrote like 60 books or something like that. It took 5 years, but every month I got a different book by her, and it was in hardcover. And then when the membership ended, they were like, hey, we're going to start the program up again under a new company. So we're going to release all the books again in softcover. Do you want all the books again? And I go, yeah, sure. So I actually have two copies of every Agatha Christie book that you only could sign up from this dumb program that probably doesn't even exist anymore. So yeah, I'm yes, Omar. I hook her books to my veins. I need them.
I love it. That's one of my favorite Sikh stories.
What were some of your influences, Omar?
Well, for me, I normally, when I go on interviews, I say Geoff Johns, but this time I'm going to go a little bit closer to home, and I'm going to say the people who are kind of close to me now are Kyle Higgins and Brian Bucciolato. And I met them at a signing at my local comic book store, Heidi Ho Comic Books. And, you know, they were just super nice guys. And you know, when I was getting more and more into comic books, they're who I looked to, who do I see, who I could, like, try to model myself after. How do they tell stories? How can I try to, you know, be as successful as they are? And I've been trying to, you know, mirror that ever since. Since the New 52 launch, it really got me picking up every single book the New 52 puts out. So it really got me into a whole other stratosphere with all these other characters and stuff like that that I've never even thought to look into before. So it's, you know, they're who I look to when I think of inspirations and who I want to try to be like.
As I see the Flash picture over your shoulder. Yeah,
that's Brian.
That's signed, Brian. Too. Signed by Booch.
Yeah, Booch signed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll second that as far as the New 52, because I grew up a Marvel guy, as
I
said plenty of times on the show. But my older brother, Adam Black, who sometimes jumps in and co-hosts on the show with us, he, you know, read Marvel, read DC. He understands all the old DC history as far as, was it the... What was the old storyline from DC?
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, all the different crises and 52s and Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinity Crisis, etc. It's all mumbo jumbo to me. But he always tries to explain it to me, and I'm just like, it just goes over my head. But then New 52 started, so that's a good, you know, jumping down point for me. And I was reading Brian Bucciolato and Francis Manapul's Flash, and I've been loving that. And there's Kyle Higgins on Nightwing. That's been fun, too. And, like, Justice League and Batman and Green Lantern books. I'm kind of enjoying it all now.
Going back to the idea, then, of Jim Shooter and the big crossovers, when are we getting the big shared universe and awesome comic?
Omar just asked me that the other day. Honestly, that something like that terrifies me. I think on a logical level, if I could try to be a Spock for a second, I would say it doesn't make sense to do that anytime soon, since our characters aren't really well known. But I do know Omar would love that, and he's a world builder. I've heard Geoff Johns and Grant Morrison label people like that before. They want what they create to just build and build and build into stuff like that, and that's why they're perfect for, like, writing the crossover events. That's why you see them on every crossover event, basically. And I'm the opposite. I like to tell, like, small intimate stories, whether they're epic or not. So I might need some convincing, but I'm sure. I mean, Omar's my boss, so what he says goes. I wouldn't be surprised that if next summer we try to do something like that.
We'll see. As of now, there's no announcements for it, but we'll see. Never say never.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, well, Thaniel and Monomyth have to sell a lot of copies first. So if you guys, if hopefully we build up a good fan base, and if that happens, then nothing will stop us after that.
Well, yeah. You know, one thing I can say is you were mentioning earlier the idea of putting issue one and issue two out in the same month. Yeah. I also work part-time in a comic store. And, you know, generally the idea is that you order more heavily on the one, and then you drop your numbers when it comes to the two, and then drop it to the three and the four, because people kind of trail off. But when you do have two issues that come out so close together, you usually just keep those numbers the same, because you figure anyone that's going to pick up one is going to come back 2 weeks later and pick up the other one. You don't have that same type of trail off that you get with the other books.
I learned that from – I worked at Top Cow before Omar I started working for Omar, and I was at Top Cow for about 6-7 months, and I learned that there, and I seen it work every time that it was done. So that was my main reason for doing it. I was like, you know what? And as a former retailer, I've worked in 4 comic book stores in my lifetime, so I've seen that happen where a store will go, okay, for all I know, this could be the next Walking Dead. If it releases one in a month, I'll see that either sales are good or not good on it. If they're not good, I'm only going to order if I order 10 of number one, I'm only going to order two or three of number two. But if they come out so close together, you don't have time to find out if it's going to be a sale or not. So you just risk it and go, okay, fine, I'll get 10 of each, you know? And yeah, so it's, I wouldn't say it's a dirty little trick. I think it's a smart business move, but also we the other reason we do it is because A, we believe in the book. Two, it makes sense structurally because then you're getting like a two-part pilot like you did when like Batman Beyond came out, which is one of my favorite cartoons. When that first aired, they did first two episodes back to back because why not? You know, it's a big story. So there's multiple reasons why we did it, but that was definitely factored in for sure.
You know, took off on a slight tangent. That sort of reminds me, when you brought up Batman Beyond, it sort of reminds me of how the Disney cartoons used to always launch their series. They'd have like a 4-episode sort of like mini movie to present the new series. Like I remember Darkwing Duck and
Gargoyles.
Yeah, Gargoyles.
Yeah.
Tailspin.
Yep. Yep. Same mentality. Absolutely. And I worked at Disney for 4.5 years. I definitely take from everywhere I work. I learned something very valuable at, and now I get to apply it to our stuff, and hopefully the old tricks still work.
So then, as an editor, just throwing this out there, how difficult is it making a judgment when you've got a writer and artist working on a project? And issue one's on time, issue two's on time, three starts to get a little late, which pushes four out a little bit later. So then you start thinking, well, maybe I need to bring someone else in to work on another issue to get time to catch up. And a lot of times it seems like when you break the flow of who the regular artist is or you break the flow of a regular writer, then a lot of times it's kind of jarring to the readers and it kind of kills the momentum a little bit. But at the same time, if you let them drag out too long, and you leave too much of a gap in between the issues,
sure,
then you have the interest that wanes and people drop off as readers. So, like, where is that balance that you look for?
Well, Omar will tell you that I don't handle situations like that well. When I think something's going to be late, I honestly freak out. I freak out in a semi-controlled, angry way, but I really just – at the end of the day, it's about trusting your talent. And then, I ask – I always defer to Omar, who is friends with everyone we work with on a personal level and on a professional level. So I always go, and I'm trying to get better at it, but I go, you tell me. If you tell me that I shouldn't worry or that I should worry less, I will do my best. But the one thing Omar and I try not to do is we don't want to change artists. That's why we're kind of gearing ourselves to do mini series mostly. Like, Separators will probably be an ongoing series, but our artist is already really ahead on that. So we're definitely okay there. And he's always rocking the house. So our goal is to hopefully never have to do that. But should that ever happen, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. And hopefully I'll be able to handle it in a professional way, and hopefully we won't burn any bridges, and hopefully everyone still goes home happy, and hopefully at the end of the day the reader is still happy with a good product,
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I guess that might be a good ending point.
Give Omar the last question.
No, I don't mind.
I was gonna give you both time to let people know where to find you online and on social media accounts.
Yeah, I mean, you can check us out at mine is Xenoglyphs, XENGLYPHS, and if you're watching us live, you can see it right at the bottom of the screen there. And you can check us out at awesomecomics.com, OSSMcomics.com.
For me, you can find me at Exploding Bullet on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can visit me at seekdonnelly.com, SIIKEDONNELLY. And other than that, definitely check out awesomecomics.com and sonoftheReaper.com so that you can learn more about Thaniel and how to get your comic book stores to order it, because it is our final order cutoff is next Thursday, February 27th. So if you're out there and you're near any retailers and you want to give our book a shot, please go in and add that to your pull list and make sure they order copies.
Boom.
Boom. Shazam.
Shazam, yep. So you're both welcome to stay on if you want as we talk about news and reviews, or if you're busy or just have other things to do, you're more than welcome to leave.
we'll stay on. I have no problem staying on. Yeah. I don't know about this, but I'm fine with staying on.
Yeah, oh. I can stay on for a few minutes as long as my boss is okay with it.
Cool. let's see. Give me a second. I got to bring up the article.
Cool. I'll be right
page.
Back.
Go over some news real quick. Never had guests actually stay on before, so.
Crap. Now you got to stay professional.
We don't mind.
Oh, Doug actually edited the
yeah, question. I added some books to review.
Nice.
For those not to know, we have a little Google Drive doc where we update every week with like what books we read and the news, just so we have it somewhere accessible for everyone. What do they call that? Telling you how the cake is made or the
yeah. Well, you always have the sausage is made.
Yeah, how the sausage.
Yeah,
made.
Sausage. Yeah.
Me and my bad metaphors. All right, so let's see. First bit of news. This is from even last week and going into this week. There's been a lot of casting for the Fox television show Gotham based on a young Commissioner Gordon. So Ben McKenzie from the OC and Southland is going to be playing a young Commissioner Gordon. And I believe they also casted someone to play Harvey Bullock. And Jada Pinkett Smith will be playing a character called Flatfish Mooney.
Yeah. Woo! I love Jada. I love you, Jada.
I'm not familiar with who that is, but.
Oh, that's a henchman, I think, of a Penguin.
Oh, nice.
Henchwoman. Yeah, she's awesome. Hopefully she plays a music in it, because she's in a band called Wicked Wisdom, and they're awesome.
It's the problem I have is when I see a character named Fish, I just think of Abe Vigoda. And Abe Vigoda and Jada Pinkett Smith are just completely different opposite ends of the spectrum.
I think I found my new best friend.
Well, I found it when you mentioned gargoyles earlier, so. Wait in my heart.
Soulmates.
Thanatos. I love that name, Thanatos. That's just an awesome
Thanatos.
Name.
Thanatos. And Keith David became my favorite voice actor of all time after that show.
Yeah, he rocked it. Let's see. So we all know the CW will be debuting the Flash television show later this year. And for people back in the 90s, they might remember the old Fox television show Flash. And the star of that show, John Wesley Shipp, will also be joining this new Flash show on CW in a mysterious new role.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm really excited to see, because the Flash, as you can see on my wall behind me, he's always been one of my favorite characters, and you know, to kind of like to see that TV show come back, because the first season of the Flash show, you know, I talked to I think it was Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo, and they were the original guys who were writing the show and were kind of making that first show on Fox. And they said that they were having their first episode of season two was actually going to be them with the Rogues kind of coming together, and so I'm excited to see what they do and I'm excited to have them like have another chance at a Flash show that won't be as bad hopefully be much
whoa,
better.
Whoa! I love that. That Flash show was awesome.
I watched it. I don't remember a thing from it, but I watched it.
Come on, Luke Skywalker was in it.
I know, but
oh yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, Mark Hamill. Yeah, I love that. That show's great, and you can buy it at like on Amazon for like $10. Do it; it's worth it. I hope he plays Jay Garrick. By the way, I hope he plays Jay.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that was my bet too. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I've seen that guest, and I guess his father as another suspect.
Yeah.
What if he's Flash from alternate timeline?
I've seen that speculated as well online.
Yep.
You know, people online always have theories.
Oh yeah.
let's see. What's other? Okay, so. So Guardians of the Galaxy trailer was debuted this week. Quick thoughts.
Rocket Raccoon is actually really, really smart.
What?
No, I have no idea. I've never really kind of watched or read a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy, so it's kind of a new introduction to me. And a lot of people I talk to are seeing these characters as like for the first time in this new medium. So it's going to be interesting because, like, you know, Superman, Batman, Iron Man, all these characters have had a fan base for many, many years, whereas Guardians of the Galaxy, a lot of the people who aren't into comic books have no idea who they are.
When I saw it, I'm kind of neutral to it. I didn't hate it, but I, you know, didn't love it either. I thought it was fine. It's just I'm not sure if I was even expecting much from it, to be honest.
I grew up a Guardians fan of the original team with the time traveling leader, and I think it's cool. It's a cool concept. I think it works. You know, it's kind of like the Space Avengers, a lot of people say. But I don't know, the trailer, I don't know, it didn't do much for me, but I still think it's probably going to be a fun movie. And I think it was cast well. So I just need to see a little bit more on it. I will say I'm more excited to see that than I am Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I'm actually a big Spider-Man fan.
Sound like dirt had something.
I was just going to say that when I watched the trailer, I just kind of felt like if I was 12 years old, I'd probably really want to see that movie.
Yeah.
But if I was someone that maybe I liked Avengers, maybe I saw Captain America on cable and like, oh, here's another Marvel movie, I probably would have seen that trailer and just thought, nah, I'll wait for this to hit Netflix. You know, didn't really feel like it's like you got to go see it in the theater type movie. Even though, like you said, it looks like it'll be a lot of fun. Just sure. Didn't feel like it's that go-to event movie that you just got to see.
Yeah, and I honestly feel like I know everyone didn't get to see the footage that was shown at Comic-Con, and that this trailer was primarily that footage with a few extra things. I think for being this close to the movie, I think they could have shown a little bit more than they did that, you know, that was new footage essentially. But on a non-hatery note, because I know I'm starting to sound like a bummer, I do want to say, if you're a fan of Rocket Raccoon, even if you're one of the new hipsters that say you're a fan, like, please, like, go online and, like, Bill Motlow, who's one of the original creators of Rocket Raccoon, he had a horrible hit and run accident recently. So definitely Google his name, Bill, B-I-L-L-M-A-N-T-L-O, and find online where you can donate a few dollars through PayPal to help him out, because he's in a bad way, and he's had a terrible head injury, which I sympathize with a lot as someone who's had a bunch of those. So if you're in the middle, if you're in the mood to do something nice, like, please give that guy some help.
Here, here.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to bum anyone out.
Oh, you're fine. Let's see. I guess the last bit of news I'll mention is Marvel and DC both, well, actually all companies released their May 2004 solicits. I don't remember. I guess the big things from Marvel was the Original Sin event starting, and from DC, I'm just off the top of my head, what they...
Doomsday.
Oh, yeah, Superman Doomsday.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're excited for that.
Yeah, I mean, Future's End, obviously, is all that stuff is starting up. And, okay. Yeah, but, I mean, and I'm excited for Future's End, but, yeah, Superman Doomsday is the big Superman crossover of the summer, that they're going to do, I think, just for the months of May and June, it's going to cross over most of the Superman titles. Yeah, I'm kind of excited. I mean, I love that story that came out when Superman died when I was like 10 years old, I think, or 9 years old. and I remember being dragged around by my aunt and uncle, who were like going and buying like first prints, second prints, third prints, like any copies they can find. They went to like grocery stores and even bought the bent ones that were in there. I mean, like they must have spent like $100, which back then that comic was what, $1.50 or something. So, or $2. So they bought over 50 copies of this one book, and they were taking me everywhere, buying trading cards, buying the bloody shirts and all that stuff. So it's such a big part of my childhood. So when I saw that they were bringing Doomsday back, and it's a new kind of version of Doomsday, and apparently his approach to hurting Superman is very different than what we've seen before. So I'm always down for a good, big, goofy Doomsday story.
I was going to say the Futures End, I saw it speculated that this was going to be a way for Jim Lee to bring back his Wildstorm characters. Not sure if I believe that or not, but kind of something to think about, especially, you know, everyone speculating with Grifter being on one of the covers.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think with Grifter coming back, I think, like, you know, DC's always kind of try to, whenever a character's book, like, gets canceled or goes away, they always try to move that character into a new kind of book or a new team book or something like that. And I think what's cool is they're trying to bring him back. I think it's a lot, has to do a lot with Jim Lee and the Wildstorm universe he created, and those characters trying to just take on a life of their own and being really integrated deep into a part of the DC universe.
Hey, kids, the Wildstorm characters are coming back. And the crowd goes mild.
I need to, if I was quick enough, I'd get the sound effects. Usually the guy running the sound effects would play the little crickets. Going crazy right now.
You can edit it in later. There's I mean, those characters, I like the new 52. I like the direction they took it in, but they try to cram too many of those characters down our throats. And of course, like, all those characters were the books that got canceled because I think the fans spoke with their money. Like, we don't want them to have their own books. They're not, they probably can support their own titles. You just need a really good team on them. So basically what we're saying is, Jim Lee, if you want us to like Wildcats and stuff, draw us a Wildcats book, my friend. Like, we want to see a Jim Lee Wildcats book.
So here we go. The Wildstorm characters are back and the crowd goes wild.
No, the crowd goes mild.
Mild.
Yeah, wow. Mild.
Like how I like my salsa.
Exactly.
That's actually how I do like it.
You're dangerously coming, my best friend. I hate you.
All right, so since we didn't do a show last week, we can even sort of mention some of the comics that came out last week during our reviews, and of course some books from this week. I'll just mention some of the ones from last week, and we can sort of discuss them as they come up. So Batman 28 was pretty controversial last week.
True.
Was it really controversial?
Maybe not controversial. It was highly talked about.
Yeah. I don't know if it's so much a controversy.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Stephanie Brown. I don't have a problem with her as a character. I mean, I think everyone's like, well, she's not as good as a Batgirl as some of the other characters. So, well, that's fine. She doesn't have to be Batgirl. But, you know, she herself is a character. I just don't like Harper Row.
Yes,
and I don't have much use for her. And every time they shove her into a story, I'm just like, why? I hope she gets shot. Like, yeah. Just, you know, I just can't stand her.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Totally best friends.
I love what Snyder's doing in the Bat books. He's doing a great job, but I don't know. I'm with you. Like Harper Row, I'm just like, wow, I the most shoehorned character. I can't figure out what the appeal is. And I'm sure she definitely has fans out there, but I'm just like, man, there's Barbara Gordon. There's Stephanie Brown. Now that she's back, there's so many other characters in the universe that are absent. Why are you giving, like, I don't want Harper Row. Right. I'd rather see somebody who was a new take on someone who was already established, you know? But that's me being old.
Have we seen Vicki Vale at all in the New 52 yet?
No.
We have, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think a detective, right?
Yeah, she's just, I think it's just, like, not, she hasn't had any main, like, story plot points. But she has been a character that at least has done news coverage for at least
one. Yes. I think she's in the backup too, right? That little two-page 52 backup news report team?
No, that's just Ambush Bug, Calendar Man, and it's not Vicki Vale. It's someone else. It's like
– Okay.
I don't think it's Vicki Vale.
I'm surprised you knew that much about those characters. I stopped trying to those things a long time ago. I used to read them now. I was like, why am I wasting my time?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I love Dustin Nguyen's art. I know he's, you know, like when he's coming in to fill in and stuff, like whether he fills in or does a whole arc every time. But I knew, it's funny, when I see his name on a book, the book's instantly spoiled for me because – obviously they revealed that Selena Kyle was like the kingpin. I'm like, yeah, why did I know that just by Dust in the Wind drawing it? when they revealed it, I was like, of course it is. Every time Selena Kyle showed up, like in Paul Dini's run of Detective Comics, Nguyen would jump in and draw that issue. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Sorry. I really read into my comic books.
It's visual storytelling at its best.
At its best. It's good stuff. I got to say, not to complain about the book. I know I hate on Harper, but I'm loving the book.
I mean, I think what's cool is this is really giving Scott Snyder a character that will kind of like be like, this is my character. This is someone no one can take away from me. This isn't Spoiler. This isn't Batgirl. This is a new character, and there's not enough females that have kind of that are superheroes. So it's cool to have him create a character that can hopefully leave a legacy for him in his time on the book.
Yeah, I think that's what he's going for.
Yeah, but Jeff Johns took Green Lantern and made Green Lantern his character.
Right,
so now exactly. Every time talks about Green Lantern, in some way they're talking about Jeff Johns. Scott Snyder should take Batman and make Batman his character.
Exactly. So
when people talk about Batman, they're talking about his book, not this stupid girl from the streets.
I think Pete Tomasi's doing a really good job on that in Batman and Robin. He made Damian his character in a way. Like, even though it's a Grant creation, I thought what he did with Damian in that book was amazing.
Well, yeah, he was sympathetic. You actually liked him, which you didn't think was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They did an awesome job with that book as a whole. Peter Tomasi has been great. I'm really excited to see what Brian Buccellato is going to do with Detective Comics. Him and Francis Manapul are going to be on Detective starting on the 30th. So I'm really excited. I mean, I got his stuff on the wall behind me again. And I'm really excited to see the direction it goes. Hopefully it's going to be a little bit more classic Batman book, which has been missing from the universe. So I'm excited to see what they do with it.
That'll get me to start reading Detective on a monthly basis again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should, because I think it's going to – I have a good feeling about that creative team switch happening in issue 30.
And see, Marvel last week had a big number one book, which was the She-Hulk from Charles Soule and Javier Pulido.
How do you pronounce that?
I'm not sure. But I reviewed it. I gave it a 5 out of 5. I enjoyed it. It was a nice, as Dirt shakes his head at me, it was a nice fun book. I'm starting to love everything that Charles Soule writes nowadays. So that
is Dirk a fan of the Dan Slott She-Hulk run?
Not necessarily. I mean, I grew up with the Peter David, so that's what I
Or
John Byrne and that, you know, type stuff. But my problem with the book, I thought the story was fine in She-Hulk 1. I thought that they endeared the character to you. If you were unfamiliar with her, they laid everything out, so you pretty much understood, you know, where she's coming from and everything. But I just could not take that artwork. The characters look like big-eyed brat dolls, and I couldn't get past that, no matter how much. And I noticed one of the things that really stuck out to me is I noticed that almost every face, when it's drawn in that book, is drawn almost exactly straight on. There are very few profile shots. There are very few three-quarter shots. They're almost always straight on, as if the artist has a really bad time, you know, turning the head and drawing it that way. And after I noticed that, after about 2 or 3 pages, it just bugged the crap out of me as I kept reading that book.
It's funny because you sound a lot like me. Like, I get very constructive of every aspect of a comic. And when I hit a hiccup like that, it's like, it's hard for me to get over that speed bump. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it bums me out, cause I'm a big fan of Charles Soule also. Like, I've been liking a lot of the stuff he's been writing, definitely lately. He's definitely doing a great job with Thunderbolts with Johnny Blaze in there. And so I'm like, wow, this is like, he's got a really good eye for storytelling. But sometimes you're right. Like sometimes it's like an art thing, or you'll like for me, Scott Snyder, he always does this thing where it's like he, it's like it, the first page is when I was a young man, I had to do this and this and this. And then it's like Superman Unchained number one. When I was a young man, my pa told me to do this. And then like Dick Grayson is Batman. When I was a young man, it's, and it's like, okay, we all have our tropes. We all have our things. And sometimes it's hard to like get out from under them as a creator. So, you know, at the end of the day, I appreciate that everyone who does a comic, whether I like it or not, is doing the best they can. And that it, and if I don't like it, definitely someone out there is going to like it, because every comic is someone's first comic. So I try to be lenient on my when I become an aggressive fanboy. But I like the first issue of She-Hulk, and I'm gonna stick with it a little bit. I think it's a good character. I like the Peter David run also, but I also like the Dan Slott run a lot as well.
I read neither of those series.
So see, this is good. So this is like an intro to you.
Yep.
Charles Soule was like a lawyer, yeah. Entertainment lawyer. So he definitely gets the lingo down too.
And he's in a band.
Yeah.
with
Jada Pinkett.
And Abe Vigoda on backup vocals.
Yeah, it's of course
weird. It's a good work. Yeah. Just one.
They're called hipster.
I'd buy that shirt.
Any other books from last week anyone wants to mention?
I remember last week.
Yeah, I was going to say if your memory can go back that far.
I liked Superman Alien. I've been liking that a lot.
What's that?
Smallville Alien. Yeah. Brian Q. Miller, who I actually really love his Stephanie Brown Batgirl run. Mm-hmm. And so him writing this book is like, and I know he wrote for Smallville, the show as well. So it's like imagine Smallville without some of the bad actors and without the budget restraints. And it's like, and it's pretty awesome. Like this new book Alien, he's fighting a monitor from another universe. So it's pretty dope.
Cool.
I started to watch the show, but after about, maybe I only made it through the first season, but it got to a point where it was just like, I don't care who's dating who, you know, so I just kind of stopped watching the show. But I always wondered if the comic, having skipped everything else afterwards, if I could sit down and read that, and if it kind of got away from all of the CW drama that they have a tendency to.
Well, yeah, because Chloe Sullivan is married to Oliver Queen, and Lois Lane and Clark Kent are married. So that's it. There's no like dating. There's no like any of that stuff. Everyone is the character they're supposed to be. It's really great.
Okay. Maybe I will check it out starting with what season 10, is that what started the digital?
It's season 11. Mm-hmm. And if you want to jump on, I'd say pick up Alien now, 'cause it's got Batman in it, like the Smallville version of Batman. And like an alternate universe version of them where I won't spoil it. And then the next one is called Smallville Lantern. It comes out in April. And it's Clark Kent becoming the Green Lantern of 2814, and John Stewart is training him.
That's awesome. That's really.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
There's been so many like lanterns getting written. It's not even funny. Like,
I'm a Green Lantern now.
Yeah. I mean, Supergirl now has a Red Lantern ring.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, it's just like, okay, we're gonna give Clark the green one, Kara's gonna get the red one, we'll give Batman the yellow one again, because, you know, why not?
Well, Jeff Johns is allowed to do it, nobody else.
Well, they're not listening to you because it's happening.
What do y'all think about?
Yeah.
What do y'all think about him and John Romero Jr. on Superman?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. To me, the Superman books need the most help in the new 52. So I'm going to give it a shot. That's for sure. So I hope good things.
Yeah. I'm interested to see if he can save those books, because those books really need some TLC, and, I understand what they're trying to do, but they haven't been executed properly. They've made it seem like everything's not a big deal. Like, they made it seem like everything's like just like easy come, easy go. They don't focus on Clark's alter ego at all. They just kind of focus like, oh, I'm Superman, I'm going to smash things. Krypton's back. Krypton's not. Krypton's back. Krypton's not. And it kind of goes.
Crossover events that go on way too long.
Yeah. Everything's been crossover.
I think the Superman. Yeah. I've never been the biggest Superman fan, but someone Ooh. That does have me reading Superman books is. What'd you say?
I booed you. I love Superman. Anyway, go ahead.
This is. Yeah, there we go. This is the stuff you miss out when Agent 70 is not on the show.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, one man that does have me reading Superman books now is Greg Pak.
Yeah. He's doing good things over in Action and Batman Superman.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of interested to see Aaron Cooter when he starts writing Superboy, because I'm loving his art.
Yeah, I like Aaron a lot. Yeah.
But I think the Superman books, like, so that's two books right there. The Charles Soule Superman, Wonder Woman's fine too. It just seems like, at least right now, it just seems like Superman's the oddball book that isn't doing well. So if John can turn that around, I think the whole line should be in good shape.
I mean, that's never a new story. Superman has struggled my entire life with sales. Obviously his death, you know, is I boo everybody. obviously his death was like the biggest moment in that character's history for the past couple decades. So, you know, he's always just been someone that, and you know, someone asked me the other day, like, why do you think he's so hard to write? And I said, well, honestly, I think what the trick to writing Superman is, at the end of the day, you have to have almost the same belief system he does. You have to believe that people can be better, that they're worth saving, that you can't be cynical. You can't write it ironically. You have to just believe every word you say through the character. So you have to be a decent human being. And I think that's the trick to writing Superman, is that your morals just have to be like his. And because they're not, and because we live in a different world nowadays where everyone doesn't want those morals anymore because it's the path of most resistance. And we live in a world where it's easier to be cynical and more constructive and more negative. Then that's how they want to interpret the character. So it's not them going against the old, they're just going with what they know. They always say, write what you know. So if you're a cynical person, you're going to write a cynical character. And that's a bummer, because the character, I feel, deserves much better than that.
When I got into Superman was back when John Byrne took over. Shortly after he started is when I got into it.
Yeah.
And so the first, you know, my first recollections of it is him doing these stories where he's just the great hero and he stops the bad guy. And, you know, it was just that basic stuff. But then they did the whole pocket universe and he killed Zod and the other Kryptonians. And then he really had this struggle where he really, like, he felt it had to be done, but he couldn't come to terms with it. And that morality struggle really tore him down, and then he exiled himself into space, and they did
and then
that
he split into two people.
A story that, well, that came later.
Didn't he have a split personality?
Well, he did the whole thing for a while where he was Gangbuster, where he would go to sleep and sleepwalking, and
really solid storytelling, John Byrne.
But for me, what drew me to the character was that idea that he was trying to hold himself up to a level that he himself felt he couldn't even stick to.
Right.
And that made it interesting. Yeah. And when you kind of have the character kind of break himself down and then try to build himself up, and then he comes back, they did the whole death, he comes back to life, then he's electric, and then he's two people who's electric. And then I just stopped reading it after, you know, because then it was all about the gimmicks and whatever. They just didn't care about the story anymore.
Right, yeah. And then they killed Clark Kent, and they were like, oh, Clark Kent's dead, so now he's just Superman. And you're just like, whatever, man.
And then he's married to Lois, and then he's not married to Lois. And
yeah, he's a hard character to pin down, but I actually find, especially in today's world, I find someone who does have those morals is interesting, because everyone else now is the opposite. So that's boring. That's the status quo. So right. heroes rise above the status quo. They set an example that you should achieve to be. And I think that's what Superman, I always thought that was my interpretation of Superman anyway, is he should always be what we aspire to be. And I think I agree with Grant Morrison and some of these English writers who have written Superman who have done it really well. They just go, well, this trick to us writing Superman is we're not embarrassed by him, but it seems like a lot of American writers are, because he's Mr. Goody Two Shoes, and they don't know how to portray that. And I think what makes Brian Q. Miller's book so great in Smallville is that he's just straight up writing Christopher Reeve. He's just like, you know what? I don't care. If you don't find it interesting, there's four other Superman books you can go buy. But I want to have a different voice and a different Superman, and I'm going to write that version.
I think in this day and age, Superman is punk.
Mohawk Superman, that's my version.
He needs pouches.
That's the problem.
That's, geez. Rob Liefeld, me and Rob Liefeld are relaunching Superman.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
let's see, books from this week. Let's see. I'll let Dirt pick one to start.
Oh, okay.
Jump spot.
Yeah, great. Thanks. When I'm not even ready. Let's see here. Let's go. You know what? I'll bring this one up because I have not read this for a very long time, and I figured, what the heck? I'd go ahead and buy it. I picked up Nova 13.
Yay!
And here's the cover. Nova, when the book first relaunched, I read the first couple issues, but I had been a big fan of the old Abnett and Lanning series that I really didn't – I guess I just didn't give it a chance is the best way to say it. I just didn't like the fact that it was a different character, and it was a whole reworking of the idea of the Nova Corps and everything like that. But I picked this one up on the one hand because I really liked the artwork, and two, because it had Beta Ray Bill. And for me, that was enough for the price of purchase. And I have to say, I did enjoy it, even though Harper Row is in the book, apparently. I still thought it was a fun story. The fact that he is a kid, you know, he's got that different perspective on everything else that's going on around the world, unlike, you know, a lot of the other superheroes, the way they would treat certain situations. But I liked, I guess for me, the idea that he is a kid on Earth, but he's also this cosmic entity. And the way that they kind of they're playing that idea that he's this tiny little, you know, kid in high school. He's undersized. He's not muscular. He's not very heroic. But then at the same time, he is a cosmic power that's almost like a force of nature. It seems like the way they're doing his powers in this book. So I really enjoyed it, and I'll stick around at least for the next couple issues and see if it continues to hold on to me.
I wasn't familiar with Beta Ray Bill. I knew, of course, who he was. I just never really read any books with him involved growing up. But I like the sort of back and forth he had going on with Sam Alexander. And, you know, they were fighting, but they weren't really fighting.
Mm-hmm.
More playful than anything.
Yeah, they're just trying to kind of feel each other out and see how far they're willing to take the fight.
And I've, you know, being a new Warriors fan, I've been a Richard Rider Nova fan for the longest. So, and then seeing Sam Alexander introduced in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon made me hate him. So going into Nova when it first launched, I was just like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to like this. But Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness brought at least a version of Sam Alexander that so I've enjoyed as other artists and writers have taken on the book now. And it's a book it's not something that I rush to read every week, but at least I know it's going to have good art, which is a big plus for me. And he's likable, so can't go wrong with it.
Yeah, that always helps. If you've got a kid or teenager, you don't want someone who's – they have this tendency a lot of times. Either the kids are way too innocent – and every time they turn around, they're like, oh, wow. Or they're just – they have that sass factor at 12 where they just have to always have a bad joke for something or a stupid quip. Or they always have to throw in like, oh, it's just like in that song I heard off the Silverchair album or something stupid that makes no sense. You know.
You were dating yourself.
At least they made him, you know, likable. But saying there's a problem with Silverchair?
No. I was just saying okay. You're old like me. Mm. The Nova. I've been liking this book, and obviously, like, I think there's more emotion in it than like, because I love the Abnett and Lanning. I love that whole Annihilation and the Nova and Silver Surfer runs they did and Drax and all that stuff and that whole universe they built, which doesn't get enough credit, was amazing. But now these guys, like this new take on him and introducing Sam Alexander, I like it because, you know, it's like I knew Sam, like the real Sam Alexander. I met him a couple times, who is Jeff Loeb's son. And that's who this character is based off of, who Sam passed away of cancer, like I think like 8 years ago. And Jeff Johns does that too with Stargirl. Stargirl is based off of Jeff Johns' sister who passed away. So like when you kind of like come from that state, I think there's a little bit more tenderness that's being handled with the character than maybe before. Like in the cartoon, they just threw Sam Alexander in because it was like an executive decision to have a youthful character in it, and they didn't want to make Richard Rider like 12 years old. So they just a group of producers probably were, and Jeff Loeb were like, let's do this. But in the comic, I thought they handled it with a little bit more care. And now that, they had like Zeb Wells took over for a few issues, and now Jerry Dugan. And like, so I think everyone is adding their own flavor to it. And this issue particularly, I really loved. And Paco Medina's artwork, I've been a fan of his for years. So, and then like you said, Beta Ray Bill, like, you're right. All those elements right there, like, even if you've never read Nova before, that's worth the price of admission.
As we take as this good ending, not ending point, but our other co-host, I'm going to try to invite on. He's available now, so give me 1 second. That's Roddy Cat on Twitter, for those who don't know.
Is he going to talk New Warriors with us?
No, his favorite book this week was Cave Woman. This is Cave Woman Killing Dinos 101.
Wait, what? She's not misproportioned at all.
Jesus. This is what Hello, misogyny.
People that will be listening to the audio version of this podcast are missing out on the visual right now.
Yeah, go Google Cave Woman Comics. Actually, you probably shouldn't.
Don't. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
Okay, so Dirt brought up Nova 13, so that's going to take me over to New Warriors number one from Christopher Yost and Marcus Toe. So once again, going straight to the art, Marcus Toe art is nice and lovely. It fits for, a cast of characters who are slightly younger. He's great at visualizing them and sort of displaying them with exuberance. And Roddy Cat joins us now. So the gist of the first issue is they're not a team just yet. You get to tell everyone's individual stories of what they're doing at that certain moment, and they're all going to be tied together by the High Evolutionary, who's a character I am not familiar with at all, and he's never really interested me. But he, of course, sees all these different individuals in the Marvel Universe as being sort of abominations that need to be wiped out. And that's another cool thing about that I like about this new Warriors book. There's tying it to, like, they sort of touch on different corners of the Marvel Universe. You have a clone, of course, a clone of Spider-Man. You have a mutant. You have a cosmic character. You have an Inhuman that I'm assuming will be introduced later, and Atlantean, et cetera. So they can sort of, and also a demigod. So you can sort of tell all these different stories from different corners of the Marvel Universe if you want to.
Yeah, but where's Night Thrasher?
That's true. We need a guy from the streets.
Well, if I remember in the last volume, his brother was trying to resurrect him, I believe.
That's true.
I'm not sure what happened with that.
Also a superhero skateboarder?
I think skateboarding was out of style back then. Maybe he was a parkour.
Maybe he was superheroic pogs in order to keep the bad guys away.
Yeah.
I think these kids should have
on that one.
Yeah, you did. I think these kids should have the Prowler as their mentor.
And then Spider-Man's going to end up really mad. I don't want to spoil anything people haven't read about. I'd like stop myself in the middle of that sentence.
I love Chris Yost, his writing. I've liked him for years, and he wrote the crap out of Scarlet Spider. I thought the fact that we had a Scarlet Spider book after everyone just totally writes off the Clone Saga as the worst Spider-Man story ever, which I challenge you to go read the other before you say that about this Clone Saga. but he wrote the living crap out of Scarlet Spider, and that book was amazing. And so to see him continue that on, bring back characters that I love like Speedball and everybody, and do a new Warriors book, and not call it all new Warriors. I love that. and but to have Scarlet Spider and Erasily in the team with them, it's like that first issue was great. Marcus's artwork, like you said, is beautiful, and I'm gonna buy every single issue.
When did Speedball go back to being Speedball? Wasn't he
he was Penance,
Nine Inch Nails guy for a while?
Yeah, he was Penance, and he was wearing like an Iron Maiden costume. But they kind of, I guess they're not brushing on that, and I'm kind of okay with that because I'm actually not a big fan of Civil War anyway. So
I think they kind of swept it under the rug a bit, that part.
Yeah. Although all of his teammates are still dead somehow.
Yeah. But you know, hey, life goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a comic book. They'll be back.
Better be.
They'll always be back.
Oh, I was thinking, wait, isn't Justice and Speedball a little too old to be with the New Warriors or something? I figured they had an age limit for the New Warriors at this point.
Well, clearly no age, remember?
Yeah, well clearly not.
Yeah, true, but I mean, Speedball was at least, well, as far as I remember, when he was Penance, he was like a little older or whatever.
Yeah,
so they aged him a little bit.
I think I would always, because there was that issue in the Abnett Landing Nova where Richard Rider comes back to Earth and sees Speedball and sees that he's become Penance, and they had that like really heartfelt conversation, which I loved, but that showed that they were both like in their 20s. I thought he was older. So I don't know. It looks like they just retconned that.
Yeah. Rip DNA.
Well, it was that bomb that the Inhumans set off. It actually worked differently on him, and it regressed his aging 10 years. So,
wait, you writing that story you're trying to tell us?
I work secretly for Marvel fixing plot holes. I've got a whole run of Bendis to work with.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you're doing a lousy job then. Nice.
I want to bring up.
Hello, by the way, new person.
Oh, how you doing? It's Roddycat here. This is Seek and Omar.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, how you doing?
Right. Oh, he said it correctly.
Yeah, he paid attention to the email.
You weren't supposed to give that away. Damn it. And I don't appreciate the dirt you gave me with my pick of the week, man. I was saving that.
Oh, jeez. Oh, you caught that, huh? Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there are very few books on the market that are made specifically for your demographic. And so it's worth pointing
except
out.
For the one I'm about to write. So don't.
I like how you
I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that. Never mind.
As Derek displays it yet again.
He's writing Caveman now.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, Roddy, we were just going around talking about books from last week and this week. We wanted to discuss it. Was there one you wanted to throw out there?
I think I already did. She-Hulk number one, and I think I came when I came because I kind of popped in before I got on. I think Dirt was in the middle of talking about it, and I think I'm kind of agreement with him about the art because it was a little. I mean, granted, the I had time to kind of work that out from the preview pages. The story was pretty decent. I'm a fan of She-Hulk, so it's like it's going to be. We'll see how this run goes. And I was just reading the slot run like before this happened. I mean, before the issue came out, so it was like not necessarily comparing them. Just kind of remember what was. So the only thing about that I think about seconds about the story is the art was a little bit art putting. So
nice.
Like Jin just looked kind of alien in the face. It was like really, really weird. But I'm sure that'll change and it'll be all right. I get used to it.
I want to bring up a comic from last week that I'm sure I'm probably the only one that's reading and enjoying, but I'm gonna mention it anyway. That's Justice League 3000 number 3.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why are you enjoying
it? Yeah.
So Howard Porter's art, for one, is nice. I know some people have said it looks muddied and whatnot, but that. I'm not sure if he's doing the colors on that or if someone else is, but just the pencil work and the colors I'm enjoying. Just the look of the future and the different space planets they're on. And I like this Justice League that's fighting amongst themselves. And I like Superman, like Superman's response to everyone is, "I'm Superman." He talks in the third person. He can't fly, even though he thinks he can fly. And so basically they're ended up having the reader think that they're clones of the originals from the past. But supposedly, I think in the next issue, they're going to be revealed to be something else. So kind of looking forward to see what the big plot twist is. So, yeah.
I read the first issue, and what I had just finished was Threshold, which is The Hunted, which was also written by Keith Giffen. And it was, like, pulling teeth for me to, like, get through that. And I really, really tried to get into that book. And, like, Jaime Reyes, the Blue Beetle, was in it. And I really tried to make it, like, exciting and fun. And I just felt like Justice League 3000 just hasn't hit home for me. I've been, like, it's just a book that hasn't really, like, gotten me to want to pick up that next issue and wanted me to continue with it. And it seems like it's, like, oh, okay, why are the Justice League back, like, 1,000 years later? Like, it feels like it's forcing it, and it's like they tried Legion of Superheroes, and it seems like it didn't work. So they're trying a different idea, which is just bring back the same characters that everyone knows. And I thought that was kind of not a cool gimmick for a future book, you know?
And people say that they're taking away – it's taking the place of the – what's the future?
Legion of Superheroes?
Yeah,
the Legion.
Yeah.
I guess I like it also because I feel like, you know, I'm getting in on the first issue, and I'm sure DC has big plans for this, so I'm enjoying being in something at the beginning.
It was weird to me because as much as I love Paul Levitz, when they relaunched the New 52, it seemed like Batman, Green Lantern, and Legion of Superheroes were the ones that got the soft reboots, and they were continuing from the stories that happened before. Yeah. And I think Legion of Superheroes, I think it's such a strong concept with really great characters that I wish they would have just did what Justice League did, which is start issue one and have Lightning Lad and Cosmic Girl, you know, trying to save the, you know, the life of that political, the political guy that they saved, and then him that they save his life after an assassination attempt, and then he starts putting these kids together, and then by the end of the first arc, like 4 or 5 issue arc, you bring in Brainiac 5 and maybe like Timberwolf or Bouncing Boy, and I think you could have really built something really cool there and brought in a lot of new fans, but they were so eager to continue what had happened before the New 52 that because they didn't know really, I felt like they didn't really know what if it was going to be a full reboot or not, and then once they decided it was, like, I'm hoping they're taking Legion off the market right now, because if you notice in the last few issues of Legion, they kind of reference them as being the Legion of the Earth 2 future and not this main New 52 universe. So they kind of brushed it off like, oh, well, they're actually the Legion of everything on Earth 2. So I hope that means that after this Justice League 3000 business, we'll get a proper Legion of Superheroes book. And DC, if you want to, I am available to write that book if you need help.
I'd love to see that book happen.
Yeah.
You know, I loved Legion of Superheroes growing up. It was actually one of the first comics I read as a random thing I grabbed off a newsstand was Legion of Superheroes 300, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so I actually went back and started buying all the back issues, and I got the Tales of the Legion, and they rebooted the book as a new format book. I loved it. Keith Giffen came in, and when he did the reboot, made everything dark, I got into that. I loved it. And then they did Zero Hour, which just crashed on everything and flushed it down the toilet, and I stopped reading. And I tried – the last couple times they tried to reboot Legion, I tried to get into it, and I just couldn't. And the New 52, they said, well, you know, we're doing a new Legion, Legion number one. I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to get on that book. I'm going to read that book. And I picked up the first issue, and it was just a continuation of the old series.
Yeah.
And I was like, this was your opportunity to get me back as a reader – you know, to flush the clone thing away and the moon blowing up and, you know, get away from all that, go back to square one and try something. And they just didn't do it. And I was so disappointed in that. So if they come back with a fresh reboot, you know, starting back with the origin, then I'll be on board. But I just couldn't take what they did in the New 52.
Yeah.
I agree. I couldn't agree more, man. I really wanted to see that thing. I really wanted to see Legion be rebooted completely. And it was just like, no, we're going to continue because we feel like it. And it has something well.
Didn't they have – weren't there two Legion books out when the new 52 launched?
Well, there was – Legion don't say lost. Legion lost. Don't say Legion lost.
too soon.
Well, no, because it doesn't make any sense, because at the end of Legion of Superheroes, when they said, oh, we're the Legion of Superheroes of Earth 2, then I go, well, how come six of your members were missing, and they ended up in Prime Earth's continuity? Like, it's just like, I'm like, just stop it. Just stop all of it. You're not making any sense.
Because Pandora messed up the universes in Flashpoint. Yeah. And everything crossed over and reboot. No, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see, anything else worth mentioning? I did enjoy the Winter Soldier, The Bitter March, number one from last week.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that movie. Holy cow.
The movie's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty great.
You know, yeah. I actually didn't have any plans on reading that book at all. I'm not a big Captain America guy.
Rick Remender.
Well, but the thing was, Marvel did this thing where if you ordered like a certain amount of copies, they doubled the amount of copies they sent to your store for free.
Sure.
So we suddenly had this gigantic stack and half of them were free. So I was just like, okay, well, I guess one of these free ones is mine. So I decided to go ahead and read it, and I loved the, I mean, they basically made him into a James Bond character. Yeah. Or, you know, he's in like Flint. I thought that was great. And so, I mean, that caught me, and that was the type of book that I didn't expect to like at all, but I'm definitely going to be sticking with the series, at least for the short
Jesus
term.
Christ. And in like Flint, right? I'm going to hug you.
So, yeah, because I definitely wouldn't have plans on reading it. I kind of just read it because it was Rick Remender, and I was just like, eh, I'll flip through it, and then it was like, oh. And then the whole back and forth between Shin and White Nick Fury. Nick Fury Prime.
No, Nick Fury, his name's just Nick Fury.
Nick Fury
White,
Prime.
White Nick Fury.
You know, gotta distinguish for the certain readers.
I've met Samuel Jackson, this, not to humble brag, but Samuel Jackson used to come into Golden Apple every once in a while, and when he wasn't filming movies. And he came in once and he goes, hey, you know, he would want us to save all the Nick Fury books for him, like anything that Nick Fury was in, Ultimate Nick Fury. And some new person put a White Nick Fury book in his stack, and he goes, Which Hasselhoff doing in my stack?
Oh no,
Hasselhoff.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't want the Hasselhoff in my stack. I'm like, sorry, we got a new person. He's like, get that out of my stack. I'm like, all right.
That's hilarious.
Oh, I will mention one other book from this week, and I'll end it for at least my stuff for this week. Amazing X-Men number 4.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I hadn't been enjoying the whole Amazing X-Men run. I like they're bringing Nightcrawler back. That's nice and good and whatnot. And Ed McGuinness art is awesome. Can't go wrong with that. But like the whole, after issue 2 and 3, I was just kind of like, eh, whatever. Nothing's really happening. But there's a lot of emotional stuff in this issue, especially between the bromance between Wolverine and Nightcrawler.
Yeah, there'll be something on that one.
Capitalized by the one page splash near the end of the book. I was like, oh.
where Nightcrawler is cradling Logan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whole new generation of slash fiction was written.
Yep.
And it's funny, on the page before that, in the one panel, you see like the little tear coming out of Wolverine's eye.
Just one tear, like a Native American looking at trash on the road.
But I was like, yes, this is the issue I needed to get me back on board with this comic.
Yeah.
Plus, they're using Firestar, who.
Yeah, I totally that part about. Yeah, that part was actually pretty cool. Like, she finally had a moment, I guess.
Another New Warriors back in comics circulation.
Well, you're also, I think they're going to do a crossover, just like a one or two issue crossover with Spider-Man when yep. Peter Parker comes back. So we get Spider-Man as Amazing Friends again. I'm like, yay!
We can only hope.
Don't have to hope. It's going to happen. It's in the solicits.
He's going to need.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Solicits. Yep. May solicits. Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Get your drool bib ready.
Dirt, any other books you want to mention?
Oh, well, there's lots of books I want to mention. Where do we go from here? You know what? Punisher. I'm still loving Punisher LA. After, you know, the Frankencastle and all of that garbage that happened, I was pretty sure that I would never read Punisher again. But the guys from Activity taking over Punisher, they put him in a new location. He's back to being straight up shooting dudes in the head and dropping grenades in the back of pickup trucks as they're driving down the road. I'm just like, I dig that violence that he's doing. The one problem I had, though, is with the end of the book, they have a supervillain appear. And that was the one thing that kind of took me out of it. There were some AIM villains in here with some new technology weapon, and you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's the Marvel Universe. You got to kind of put those little winks and nods in there, I guess, not keep it, you know, just a straight action book. But having the supervillain appear at the end, which, you know, I won't spoil, just kind of took me out a little bit. But I still – the artwork is great. I still love the idea of him being in the L.A. underworld as opposed to being another guy just in New York blending in with everything else happening there. So I still enjoyed it, and I'm still sticking with the series.
I wonder if we're going to see, like, the Shroud or Moon Knight pop up.
Oh, the Shroud. Nice. I've always wanted Punisher is a character that I've always liked, even though he's a one-trick pony. Like, I think if you can write that trick really well – you can do it like Garth Ennis did. You can write a really good Punisher story. I've always wanted to write one where he's doing his thing. He's going around. He's killing a bunch of bad guys, and it seems like everything's, you know. But then a couple times maybe like someone catches him in his crosshairs because he's getting older and he's like getting slower. So he misses death a few times by someone interfering, and you're like, whoa, who's saving Punisher? And then, like, even something where something almost falls on him and he gets out of the way just in time and he doesn't know how, and then find out that Mephisto has been protecting him, because every time Punisher kills somebody, that soul goes right to Mephisto.
That'd be awesome.
And then you have Punisher going like, well, should I keep killing people? Because I'm just feeding the devil now.
So it almost becomes like a Constantine of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, kind of. Ghost Rider, I had a pop. I always wanted to do a buddy story, like a buddy cop road traveling story with Punisher and Ghost Rider.
I do read that.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that they do have Punisher looking older. Yeah. You know, he's always covered in bandages. He's not moving, you know, as quickly. He does get taken by surprise a couple times. You know, so he's not like lightning fast reflexes. He's not like Batman, you know, who you could just never catch. You know, he is just a regular guy. but he just has to be really good at what he does.
A regular Marine who kills. Okay.
He's like
Nice. For Omar and Seek, what we call Click of the Week is basically we pick one comic to be our pick of the week. So
nice.
I shall go first. Between Amazing X-Men number 4 and New Warriors number 1, I'm going to go New Warriors number 1 because I'm a homer.
Nice.
Okay. What about Who's you, Roddy?
Harley Quinn. No, I'm just kidding. you know what? Since Age of 70 is not here, and I did enjoy this book, Avengers World number 3.
Yeah.
Nice. Shang-Chi.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to see a good Shang-Chi story come out now. I think Age of 70 was like, he didn't. not to spoil anything, but not he didn't want to see Shang-Chi kind of go out like he did. But, hey, you know, even he knew how that fight was going to go, but it was a good fight, and it was kind of just some good exposition going on in the story. So I enjoyed it a lot. I want to see more of those. Maybe they'll – I think they said something about giving them a miniseries or something.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
So I'll be looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, and I'll even say, you know, I have not been reading Avengers stuff, you know, whatever. But I did happen to start to flip through this one, and I was like, oh, this actually looks interesting. So I did sit down and read it, and I really enjoyed it. And if they were to do a series, I thought, you know, to myself, hey, if they do a series and they kind of do it the way this issue's done, where it's kind of explaining, you know, how his powers work and where he's drawing from and that kind of stuff, I really enjoyed how that played out. And then, of course, they say, oh, yeah, he's getting a series. I'm like, okay, well, there you go. And that's a good way to set up for it.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's a miniseries, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's, I don't think he's ever been a character that has carried his own book, you know, for any length of time. Like, I can only think of, like, one. I think he only had, like, a book in the 70s or something, maybe two books or something, along the line. So I don't know he would have been.
Yeah, and he was in, like, Marvel Comics Presents and stuff like that as well. Yeah.
So I don't know if he would have just been able to carry a book, as much as I hate to say that, but you never know. I mean, the miniseries could springboard into a new book.
It just takes the right writer. Like, for example, like someone was, I have a Prowler idea, and my friend's like, that'd be a good miniseries, and I go, no, I could write that book forever. Just no one would buy it, but I could write it forever.
Dirt, what's your click of the week?
I'm actually gonna kind of reach a little over the edge here and go with Alex and Ada, number 4. I didn't expect to like this book, really. I mean, it was just kind of one of those things that it looked a little interesting, so I figured I'd read it. But I've really enjoyed this series. The basic concept is, in the near future, these lifelike androids are being sold almost as, like, virtual slaves. And the guy who gets one, it's a gift from his grandmother. He doesn't want to keep it, but he starts to feel like, you know, this is an android. The person's not real, but it feels like there's an actual intelligence here. And he starts to feel bad, and he starts to not – he can't accept that this is just a product that you buy and sell. It almost feels like there is life here, and it's unfair that – you know, it's being treated this way. And the series is dealing with all these issues of when does artificial intelligence become real intelligence? You know, where does kind of that idea of life begin? What is the meaning of property versus having their own self worth? And it's all tied into this futuristic world. I love the artwork, and the storytelling just feels very down home and down to earth, and the way he struggles with the idea. So I've really enjoyed the way that they've played with those characters. And I find that it's one of those few books, like on Tuesday when we get the new comics in and I'm sorting and putting everything away, it's one of those that I have a tendency to just kind of stop, and I have to just kind of stop and read it, you know, flip through it while I'm doing the inventory and give it a little bit extra time.
I will say I am enjoying the series too, even though I haven't read. I'm caught up. I just haven't read this week's issue. But yeah, it's been a surprise hit for me.
Yeah, well, there's actually a revelation in this book that kind of explains why he felt the way he felt, and how he was able to see what he sees, and it kind of changes your whole perspective on these products. I won't spoil it, but when issue 5 comes out, I'll be sure to just, you know, tell the whole story.
Nice.
Okay. All right. So I guess that's it for the show.
I was going to bring up Revolutionary World, but since I hadn't had a chance to read it from last week, I guess, and it looks like it's still kind of crazy, I'll shelve that from another time.
So, just click of the week.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Omar.
No, you go ahead first.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Mine is kind of from last week, because since we talked about New Warriors and everything, which I love this week. But The Mercenary Sea by Kel Simons, which is an Image book, and it's kind of a cross between Johnny Quest meets Raiders of the Lost Ark. If you're a fan of, like, The art's beautiful in the book. If you're a fan of like that kind of like Venture Brothers. If you're a fan of stuff like that, or C-Lab and stuff, like it's kind of a nod to that era of storytelling, and it's really, really great. And I know it's sold out, so they're going to second printing. So if you're out there and you're looking for a fun indie book, pick up The Mercenary Sea. It's a really great adventure book.
That's on my list to read.
Yeah. Do it. It's amazing.
And my pick's a little bit more mainstream. It's Batman Beyond Universe, number 7. It just came out. That book has just been so much fun, from a crossover from an animated universe into the comic book universe. And for that, it just seems like it's like the perfect kind of like continuation of that story, that like it would never make it to TV because it's so wild and so out there and so much changes throughout the storyline. So it's cool to see it kind of just be able to get done in comic book way.
Yeah, I'm like on issue 4 or 5 of the digital, and it just came out so often it was hard for me to keep up with it. I do plan on hopefully going back to read it.
Yeah, you should. It's a blast.
Cool. So that's all everybody's clicks of the week. And, of course, as Vatican said, Agent 70's pick was Avengers World number 3. So I want to thank our guests for staying throughout the entire episode, Omar and Seek.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us on, man. Really a lot of fun. Talking about comics.
If you've got any other things in the future, like monomyths or anything else you need to promote, you're more than welcome to come back on the show.
Sweet. Thank you.
We'll definitely be back, and hopefully you guys check out Daniel number 1. I know you guys have already read, but Daniel's 2 through 4, I hope you guys enjoy it and love it. So
yes, we will. So on behalf of Dirt and Roddy Cat and Agent 70, who's not here, I'm Tim DLWG, and we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Bye.
Bye.